Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Hurricane Irene left days ago, the continental United States anyway. So why has it been so difficult to turn the lights back on in so many homes and businesses? Here's Dan Genest of Dominion Virginia Power.
One broken pole can take about 6 to 7 hours to repair. In some cases, we can't even get in there with our auger trucks. We have to carry these poles. They have to get 6 or 7 guys and carry these huge poles on their shoulders to where they need to go and then dig the holes by hand.
The American Society for Civil Engineers says the country's infrastructure is ill-prepared to deal with hurricanes and other severe weather. Surprise to you, and probably not to Bob Henley, senior reporter for The Takeaway's co-producer station, WNYC. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Also with us, David Wagman, chief editor for Power Engineering Magazine. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you.
So, okay, in a country where we actually see a number of hurricanes and severe weather and tornadoes, and we've seen them all this year, flooding, tornadoes, hurricanes, really our infrastructure is not prepared to handle them? Why is that?
It's a matter of risk and where the storms are going to go for a large part of it. You can make an investment really to secure the infrastructure against these things, but it would be an enormous cost based against the risk that a particular storm is going to do a particular amount of damage. So it becomes a bit more cost effective, if you will, to make the investment, to make the repairs when storms do occur.
That's David Wagman, who is a chief editor of Power Engineering Magazine, and also with us, Bob Henley, senior reporter for The Takeaway's co-producer station, WNYC. Bob, there's this odd divergence in the narrative here, because we have most of the country talking about how we dodged a bullet, right? And then you hear from these people who are in Vermont and northern New Jersey, and they're saying, what do you mean we didn't dodge any bullets?
I think what we're seeing here is really the fact that what is set into motion here is a result of a generation of very bad land use policies throughout the United States, but particularly in the Northeast Corridor from North Carolina up through New England. Since the 1770s, the 13-some-odd states have lost anywhere between 70% to a third of their wetlands. They've had dramatic losses of farmland, forest land. All of these things act as natural sponges. They're ultimately your most cost-effective water control mitigation infrastructure. At the same time, we've seen an integration of utilities around the country. All you have to do is go back to the joint U.S.-Canadian investigation of the blackout back in 2003 to see where First Energy evidently did not pay attention to the maintenance of way, that is, the area through which transmission lines go. And the funny thing is about weeds, when you don't pay attention to them, they become trees. And so over time, they overgrow, and then when a storm event comes, and we do seem to be having more of these with greater intensity and frequency, it takes out power lines. And also, this is really the problem with sprawl development in general. We have really expanded outside of urban infrastructure, where you have often communities are developed with their storefronts and their McDonald's, whatever, and there's really not secure infrastructure in place. It almost like the development happens, and then we follow it up with redundancies. In this case, we got cut short.
Right, that's Bob Henley, reporter for The Takeaway's co-producer station, WNYC, and David Wagman is with us, chief editor for Power Engineering Magazine. So, David, Bob just brought up a number of things, and I want to just take them one by one. Let's talk about the energy infrastructure here. Is it too spread out? Is it too spread out for us to keep up on maintenance through all of these lines? I mean, some of these communities are way out in the middle of nowhere, far separated from others. Perhaps it's just too expensive to really keep them well maintained.
Well, yeah, that can be a problem. As Bob pointed out, a lot of the damage comes from trees coming over and taking down power lines, and it is up to the utilities to be able to maintain the right-of-way. They do have budgets put aside to go out and do tree trimming. That's an ongoing effort that utilities are always working on. But you can still have a big 200-year-old tree that goes over and takes out a power line that's seemingly been far back from where the line had been. You can there's some alternatives. A customer can always go off the grid, can install things at their house, put on rooftop solar, put up a wind turbine, those types of things. That can be a bit expensive, though. If you want to remain connected to the grid, sometimes you do have to put up with the eventuality of an outage. The grid probably can be made more secure using smart grid and some of the smart infrastructure technologies that are coming along, so that incidents such as the 2003 blackout really can be isolated. That was a cascading blackout.
Yeah.
That had there been probably more intelligence on the grid, could have been better maintained, and that's at the transmission level, and it requires some investment. The technology exists.
An investment.
It's a matter of investing in it.
Yeah, people don't seem to want to make. That's David Wagman, chief editor of Power Engineering Magazine.
It was funny when we were reporting right after the storm stopped, and we're talking to crews from around the country, and it was great to get out there because you did find. One of the big challenges here is that because of the scale of this storm, like it was like the size of Europe that hit us, okay? And so normally you would have what's called mutual aid in terms of utility support where you could call the next state over. Because of the regional scale, almost hemispheric scale of this storm, those crews were engaged in their own local efforts. So they were pulling people away as far away from Missouri. So, of course, I saw the guys from Missouri doing some stuff in my neighborhood, and they said to me, and they wouldn't go on tape, of course, gosh, we can't believe that you guys have it so bad here. I mean, if vegetation is this close to a line, we would have been out here months ago. And that's the problem. These utilities and cost cutting have subbed out a lot of these responsibilities and laid these people off.
I wanted you to take a listen to Alicia Schaefer here. She's in Prattsville, New York, which she says looks like a war zone.
I have no grocery store. I have my children can't go to school next week because the school was flooded. All of our friends, all of our children's friends, the gas station is not open. Our entire way of life is completely changed because of this.
And you can actually see pictures of the flood damage in Prattsville, New York, and some of the surrounding areas at our website, thetakeaway.org. Click on today's show. Bob, we're going to talk more about this in just a moment. But basically, what you may say to Alicia Schaefer is move closer to an urban area.
I think that we're seeing the end of the suburban narrative. It might be just too expensive to carry.
Okay, that's Bob Henley, reporter for WNYC Radio, which is co-producer of The Takeaway. David Wagman, also thanks to you, chief editor of Power Engineering Magazine. You can read more from Bob about Hurricane Irene and President Obama's visit to New Jersey. He's got his Stuck Nation column. Check it out at thetakeaway.org. We want to continue the conversation we were having about the country's infrastructure with Bob Henley, reporter for WNYC Radio, which is a co-producer of The Takeaway. But we want to throw this question out to you. Is your neighborhood still recovering from Hurricane Irene? Maybe you still don't have power. Maybe you're one of the unfortunate few isolated still by floodwaters. Tell us your storm story and how much help you're getting at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Bob, I want you to take a listen once again to the voice of Alicia Schaefer. She owns Crow Dog Farm in Lexington to New York, which is near the little town of Prattsville.
The only thing that we had during the storm was our local radio station, and that was the only form of communication that we had. So we literally just had days of local people who did actually get cell service. I believe that there were only some cell service providers still working on the mountaintop at one point, and they'd call in and offer what they could.
Okay, Bob, let's go back to this original, your idea that the Hurricane Irene has exposed weaknesses in our infrastructure.
Right.
One of the things that we found out is that some of the dams that are built to handle these floodwaters broke.
Right. They're at least certainly cracked. There was great reporting in the Times Union. This is just a quote, floodwater engulfed an earthen embankment that is part of the Vischer Ferry Power Dam at Lock 7. Water seeped into the embankment, threatening to weaken or wash it away. The New York Power Authority, which owns the dam and a hydroelectric plant at the site, declared an emergency. Through that part of upstate New York, you have locks that also help control the water. Engineers have told me that the scale of this storm was something where river valleys became the entire body of the river. So it expanded three times its flow rate, overwhelming the scale of whatever infrastructure we thought was in place. So the implications are significant here. And throughout the history of the United States, very recently, we have really ignored dams. I mean, there are more than 4,000 that are deficient across the country, including, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers, 1,800 that are high hazard. We've seen a situation where from 2001, we had 364 of these dangerous dams. In 2007, that had swollen to 1,700. So when the president comes to Paterson on Sunday, Paterson, New Jersey, he has an opportunity here to take up our 21st century WPA challenge, which will be a combination of meaningful open space. For instance, right now, Congress is sitting on a $200 million national program to help farmland preservation, which is a great way to prevent water from running off. If you put blacktop on farmland and turn it into box stores, there's no place for the water to go. So by having this infrastructure in place and going back and redoubling what we have neglected, we can both stimulate the economy and safeguard against what appears to be increasing incidences of these storms. I mean, we have to ask ourselves, can we be surprised if there's water in our basement when we put shopping malls in our swamps?
This is all part of the discussion that Bob Henley has in his column. He writes about President Obama's upcoming visit to New Jersey and about Hurricane Irene in his Stuck Nation column. And you can check that out at thetakeaway.org. So Bob, you're kind of calling on the president to create a new WPA, but in this political climate, is it even possible?
Well, listen, consider that Congress just reported that we've wasted $60 billion on projects in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I'm talking about $200 million for a national program for farmland preservation. I mean, we've got to start, you know, really doing serious risk assessment analysis, because we lost significant lives after Katrina. We had a significant loss of life now. And we have to learn the lessons that we're being confronted with here. We can't ignore them.
Bob Henley is a senior reporter for WNYC Radio, a co-producer of The Takeaway. Thanks as always, Bob.
Thanks.